repeat after me. Jnana vyakya prakatita parabrahma tattvam nirvanam. Jnana vyakya prakatita parabrahma tattvam nirvanam. Varshishtante vasadrashiganaihi avratam brahmanishtai. Varshishtante vasadrashiganaihi avratam brahmanishtai. Acharyendram karakalitachinmudram anandamurtim. Acharyendram karakalitachinmudram anandamurtim. Swatma ramam mudita vadanam dakshina murtimide. Swatma ramam mudita vadanam dakshina murtimide. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijam karagatam. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijam karagatam. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivodbhutam yatha nidraya. Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivodbhutam yatha nidraya. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanameva dvayam. Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanameva dvayam. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Bijasyam Karibankaro Dagadidam Kvamir Vikalpam Kunaha. Bijasyam Karibankaro Dagadidam Prangir vikalpam punaha. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vai chitri chitri kritam. Maya kalpita desha kala kalana vai chitri chitri kritam. Maya viva vijrimpayatyapi mahayogi vayasvechaya. Maya viva vijrimpayatyapi mahayogi vayasvechaya. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Yasyaiva spuranam sadatmakam asachalpartakam bhasate. Yasyaiva spuranam sadatmakam asatkalpartakam pasate. Sakshat tatvamasiti veda vachasa yobodhayatyashritan. Sakshat tatvamasiti veda vachasa yobodhayatyashritan. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir bhavampo nidau. Yat sakshat karanat bhavena punaravrittir bhavampo nidau. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Nana chidgurgadhodarasthita mahadipa prabhabhaswaram. Nana chidgurgadhodarasthita mahadipa prabhabhaswaram. Jnanam yasya chitichakshuradhikarnadvara bahispandate. Jnanam yasya chitichakshuradhikarnadvara bahispandate. Janami titameva bhantamanu bhatye tatsamastam jagat. Janami titameva bhantamanu bhatye tatsamastam jagat. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Just where we left off in the report, okay? Nana Chidra, agree with him? Nana Chidra Gata Fudara Stita Maha Deepa Prabha Baswaram. Agree with him? With me, Jenny?
Yes.
Yes. Jnanam Yasya to Chakshuhu Adi, it's actually Chakshus, Chakshuhu, Chakshus, Adi, Karana, Dwara, Bahihi, Spandate. Janami iti, Tam eva, Bhantam, Anubhati, Etat, Samastam, Jagat, Tasmai, Shri, Guru Murtiye, Namah idam, Namaha idam, Shri Dakshinamurtiye. I'll work our way through this. This Dakshinamurti has such, you know, it's long. All of the lines are long, and it has long, long compounds and everything. But each verse is really a whole vision. So it's beautiful. Every time when we're chanting it, I think of when we were some of us were in India. We used to chant this every day before the Brahma Sutras. So Nana means various, many, many different chidras, many different holes. Nana chidra, many holes, a variety of holes. Gata is a pot. Udara is the belly of the pot, inside of a pot, like a clay pot, inside of a pot, which has many holes, a variety of holes. And so you say you have a pot, right? And this pot has many holes in it. Okay? Edward, move over just a little bit that way.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, nana, chidra, gata, udara, stitta. So stitta means abiding. So reading backwards, abiding Uda in the inside of a gutta of a pot which has many holes. Na chidra is holes. But nana chidra gutta udara stitta. Maha deepa. Maha is a great deepa lamp. A great lamp. A large lamp. So now read backwards. A large lamp. Maha means great or big or large. Deepa is a lamp. So maha deepa. A great lamp. Big lamp. Which is placed in the belly of a pot, inside of a pot, which has many holes. Okay. The pot has many holes in it. Okay, so now we have Nana, Chidra, Kata, Udara, Stitta, Mahadipa, Prabha, Baswaram. Shining brightly. Prabha means the light. His pot is shining. With the light shining brightly. Prabha, Baswaram. So a light which is shining brightly, the light shining brightly, of a large lamp, which is placed in the belly of a pot, which has many holes. That's the compound, okay? Jnanam yasya. Jnanam, knowledge. Whose knowledge, whose consciousness? Yasya is whose. Jnanam yasya, whose consciousness? Two does not need to be translated. Jnanam yasya, whose consciousness? Chakshu, the eyes, adi, etc., Karana, dwara, through the karanas, through the sense organs. Karanas are the instruments. Through the sense organs, beginning with the eyes. Eyes, ears, nose, mouth, sense of touch, all the five sense organs. So through the instruments, sense organs, beginning with the chakshus, beginning with the eyes, adi is beginning with the eyes. Bahihi, outside, bandate, it goes outside. Okay, so this is what it says is, the one whose consciousness, for whom the consciousness, the jnanam, goes outside by means of, through the sense organs, beginning with the eyes. So now it says, if we take the two lines, whose consciousness, like a brightly shining light of a big lamp, situated inside a pot that has many holes. Like that, the one whose consciousness seemingly goes out through the sense organ, going out through the sense organs, makes the world appear as though outside, appears to be outside. Right? So let's go on. What appears to be outside is what we have to see. Janami iti, as I know, Janami, tameva bhantam, that which shines as I know, anubhati, etat samastam jagat. Etat samastam jagat, this entire world, right? This etat means this, samastam, entire jagat, this entire universe, this entire world, anubhati, shines after that consciousness which is in the form of I know. Okay? So now, so to him whose consciousness appears out, that goes outside through the sense organs, right? For that person, this entire world appears to be outside. It appears to be outside. This entire world, which is in fact shining after that consciousness, which takes the form of I know. Okay? So then, to him, the one whose consciousness as though goes out through the sense organs, illumining this physical world, making everything appear outside, to that one, my salutations. To him who is in the form of my guru, my namaskars, these salutations to the Dakshinamurti, who is in the form of my teacher. That's basically what it says. Let's see how we talk. In a sense, radically different points of view in terms of our experience of the universe. There's Ishvara's point of view, and there's the Jiva's point of view. Ishvara is the Sat Chit, the conscious being, the I am, the me, the conscious being, which is not limited at all by any conditioning adjunct. Ishvara doesn't, the whole manifest creation, if I take it from consciousness, the consciousness illumining the whole manifest creation. I mean, by whole manifest creation, the entire creation, these words, etat, samastam, jagat, all of this, what we're talking about there is the whole manifest creation, everything on every level that exists within time and space. That's the manifest creation. If that manifest creation is my upadhi, right. The whole thing is my upadhi. In other words, my sense of self, of the consciousness, is something which pervades the entire creation. Right? Like if I use my meadow example, if I imagine a meadow, if I ask you to imagine a meadow, then I have an Ishvara, I am the Ishvara of that meadow in my imagination. Because the entire imagination, the entire thought is pervaded by me. I'm not identified or stuck into a false identification with any given part. I am the whole. And so, in fact, if we just think of the meadow imagination for a moment, and maybe juxtapose this physical body, like for instance, this physical body for me is a jiva within this creation. So I've got this entire creation, and then me as a jiva, as an individual within this creation. My sense of self, in terms of this physical body, goes through all the way through to the skin. I mean, everything that's going on with this physical body, you know, everything internally, everything that's going on in the mind and the sense organs, the whole what we call karya karana sangata, the whole body-mind complex, enjoys a sense of me. I have a sense of wholeness. I am a whole person. I am the whole person. Right? That's not anything left out. My being pervades this whole conglomerate. In fact, if I were to really think about it in terms of this physical body, it's made up of an infinite number of parts, countless number of systems that are going on to make this physical body as one whole, right, as a whole unit. This is one whole unit. And I can say that this is one whole unit because I have a sense of it being one whole unit, one whole conscious being. Okay? Now, if I think, now go to the meadow for a minute, if I imagine a meadow, that's a different sense of wholeness. But it's nevertheless a sense of wholeness. If I imagine the meadow, then now instead of a physical body, I have a bigger type of conglomerate. This conglomerate I still see as one interconnected whole, but this interconnected whole, instead of being made of, you know, muscles and a skeleton and organs and blood, etc., this interconnected whole is made of trees and, you know, and mountains and fields and, you know, the sun and the clouds and the sky and everything that happens to be within that one meadow. The one meadow contains many, many parts. Now, in terms of the meadow, I get to enjoy an Ishwaratvam in reference to the meadow, because I take myself to be the whole meadow. The whole meadow comes from me. It enjoys my being pervasively. It enjoys my consciousness pervasively. And I would even say, I wouldn't say that the meadow is outside of me. The meadow doesn't even appear to be outside of me. See that if I have the imagination of a meadow and I'm the Ishwara of the meadow, I don't have a sense that the meadow is outside of me. The whole meadow exists in me, it comes from me, it's sustained by me, and it resolves into me. I'm the conscious being of the meadow. See what I mean? There's not an inside and an outside. The meadow is made of many parts. I see the parts as one whole that makes up the word meadow. It could be the word universe, the meadow universe, you know. Doesn't make any difference what it is, but I name it. The fact is that whatever that imagination is one whole enjoying me, and it is not outside of me. Now, I brought in this physical body just for the moment, just to say that even in terms of this world where you're a jiva, you're an individual within the creation, in terms of recognizing having a sense of self for a conglomerate, this is a conglomerate. It's made of many, many different systems and parts. But because I have a sense of me-ness, it holds it all together as one entity. Right? My sense of oneness or wholeness only extends to this physical body in this level of reality. Right? And from the standpoint of the jiva, I don't have an Ishwara. I only have a funny kind of little Ishwaratvam in reference to the body. There's no Ishwaratvam that extends beyond the body, so that I can say, you know, this whole room comes from me, is sustained by me, and resolves into me. That in fact there is no outside. I don't experience. Can I say that in reference to this room? With me as a jiva in this room, I can't really say that there's no inside outside, because you're all outside. I'm the subject and you're all the object. You all appear outside. My consciousness appears to be, you know, like as though this body is a clay pot. This is the pot. And consciousness is inside of it, coming out of all of these holes. The light, the consciousness is pouring out of my sense organs, you know, lighting up this universe of the room, which is outside of me. That's how it appears. And then I say, I know this. I know this entire room. I experience this entire room through my sense organs. I experience this whole world, I experience as though it is outside of me from the standpoint of this body. My only sense of self, the sense of meanness, stops here. Right? It stops here. Now, what I want you to understand, though, is that this thing, it stops here, but this is a conglomerate of many, many different systems and many different parts. But all of these interrelated, interconnected parts enjoy a sense of me, even though the right hand is different from the left hand, and the organ is different from the heart, and the muscles are different from the skeleton. These parts are all different, but they're all working together, and they form a unit, and that entire unit enjoys one sense of self. Okay? So now, in order for us, so I was in a way saying a little bit of Ishwar Tattvam for this one sense of self, only in the sense that this is a conglomerate, and we don't even think that this whole conglomerate, this whole functioning conglomerate, enjoys one meanness, right? There's one meanness that enjoys this whole thing. But we don't have one meanness that enjoys the whole room as me, or that enjoys the whole universe as me. That's not the experience. Whereas, if we go into our subjective experience, which Bhagavan gave us this, we all have our little Ishwaratvam. Alpa means our little Alpa Ishwaratvam, means mini Ishwaratvam. Because you have the ability to imagine. And when you imagine a universe, then you do have an extended sense of consciousness, of meanness. And so in reference to your imagination of the meadow, there's no inside and outside, right? There's just the whole meadow is in me. All of the beings are in me, right? All of the trees, all of the grass, the sun is in me, the sky is in me, everything is in me. There's nothing outside of me. There's no subject-object in that way. The whole thing enjoys me. Now, in terms of Ishwara, what would Ishwara be like? Let's look at the meadow again. So I'm the Ishwara of the meadow, only though from the standpoint of the conscious being from whom this meadow comes. I can say I am the meadow. There's no meadow apart from me. There's no division. There's no being. There's no, look at it like this. Here you have the meadow imagination. There is no division of existence. You have the meadow imagination in your own being. So therefore, the entire meadow is. But you don't split up the isness to say, here's a piece of isness over here at the tree, and here's a piece of isness over here at the sun, and here's a piece of isness over here at the grass. See what I mean? The being which the meadow enjoys is one pervasive, one whole being. And that whole being is in the form as though, or supporting the imagination of the meadow. And similarly, the consciousness, the existence with is with the conscious being, the knownness of the meadow, right? We don't think of part of the meadow being known and not another part. Right, so you have the whole meadow imagination. It's not like, well, now the tree is known, and now the grass is known, and now the sun is known. The entire meadow, the entire projection is equally known, right? So it's knownness, the knownness, the sat-chit is the very stuff of the meadow, and the meadow enjoys it equally, every part of the meadow. And so the meadow comes from the sat-chit, from the conscious being, and it resolves into the conscious being. There's no sense of inside and outside, except for if you put some beings in the meadow and have some people walking around in the meadow. Some jivas are in the meadow. If the jivas are in the meadow, then for them, the conscious being, which for Ishwara is just obviously me, the hole from which the whole meadow comes, but for the beings walking around in the meadow, their experience is having consciousness as though being inside of me, the body, you know, like a lamp within a pot, and then shooting out through the sense organs to illumine different parts in the meadow. That's the experience of the jiva. You know, it's like consciousness is pouring out of the holes of the pot. And pouring out of the holes of the pot, wherever those holes of knownness, of knowledge land, then there is knownness. That object is known. And so if pouring out of my eyes, if I'm looking at a grasshopper, you know, in the grass, then the grasshopper becomes known. But if I look up here at the bird in the sky, then the bird in the sky becomes known. Wherever these, you know, rays of consciousness are as though, you know, are pouring out of the holes of the sense organs. And so when that's the situation, you're part of the meadow, you're a jiva within the meadow, then this entire universe seems to be outside of you. And who are you? You are an object in the meadow. And so whenever we're talking about this subject-object relationship, the subject-object relationship, like I know this, you know, requires two objects. You know, if I say I know this, then there has to be a jiva who is you know, like sense organs and mind, who is knowing an object. So I know you, right? Or you know me. Or the animals know each other. Right? Now say you look at it like that. I know you. I know you. You know me. So now think of the meadow. I'm in the meadow, you're in the meadow. And so I say, I know you, you say you know me. Right? But both the knower and the known are objects in the meadow. So now, from the standpoint of Ishwara, both the one who says, I know you, and this one that says, I know you, right? Both of them are equally illumined by the one self. See what I mean? The consciousness that the one who says, I know you, is enjoying is the same consciousness that the other one is saying that says, I know you. So in reality, the subject-object relationship is between two objectifiable things, between two objects. You just have one of the objects at least has to have sense organs, you know. It has to have holes. It has to have these holes in the pot where the consciousness can come out and say, I know you. Now, what if I say, you know, I know the rug. The rug isn't going to come back and say, I know you too, right? Because the rug doesn't have sense organs. It doesn't have a mind. But from the standpoint of Ishwara, from the standpoint of the one from whom the whole meadow has come, the rug, right, is as much an object in the meadow as is the person in the meadow. You see that? Like if I have, let me go back to say that the grass in the meadow, or say the rock in the meadow, get something really inert. The rock in the meadow and the person in the meadow. The rock is an object. The person is an object. But let's take it further. The rock is an object, but the rock doesn't have a sense organs in mind. Okay? So we just talk about the rock is an object, the rock is known in the meadow. Now look at the human being. The human being in the meadow, the human being object is known. There's a human being there, there's a rock there. Both are known. Both are objectified. But what happens here is that here we've got these two objects in the meadow, the rock and the human being. But the human being has sense organs, which are also known. This is where the problem is. Rock, human being, both are part of the meadow, both are known. If it's a dead person, it's a dead body. Then we've got a rock, and we've got a dead body, human being, okay? But no sense organs and no mind. So we've just got two objects there, okay? But now, if it's a human being who's a living, then we've got a body with sense organs and mind and einotion, right? All of which are known. They're all known. But the problem is that for the human being, the sense organs not only are known, because just think about it, you are not only aware of your physical body, you don't just illumine your physical body, you also illumine your sense organs. You know if they work, you know if you can see, or if you're blind, you know if you can hear, you know if you have a sense of touch, you're aware of your sense organs. you're aware of the thoughts of your mind. I mean, that's very clear. If I ask you, do you know what you're thinking? You say, yes. Do you know what you're feeling? Yes, I know what I'm feeling. Do you know what you're seeing? Yes, I know what I'm seeing. Do your eyes work? Yes, they work. Do your ears work? They're getting deaf a little bit. They used to work better than they do now. Okay, so we can have running commentary in all of these parts of you as a human being, you know. You know about them. You can objectify them. They're all something which you have a subject-object relationship with, actually. So that's the easy part. But why you get confused is because these things that are known also function as knowers. In other words, I know my sense organs, but I don't usually think about it like that. I think of them as being capable of knowing. In other words, my eyes see form. If I didn't say I'm a character in the meadow and I'm blind, I can't see any form. If I have eyes, I see form. If I have ears, I hear sound. So these sense organs are giving me an experience of the meadow from within the meadow. So we've got two things happening here. The sense organs give me knowledge of the meadow from within the meadow, and the sense organs are known, both. They're instruments which give knowledge of the meadow from within the meadow, and they're known. The mind is something which thinks about the meadow, you know, or has emotions about the meadow, has feelings about the meadow. So the mind, you can say, is the enjoyer of the meadow, the one who gains knowledge of the meadow, you know, who has does functions in the meadow, becomes again a knower and an enjoyer of the meadow. And so again, the mind is a participant, it's a knower. The mind and the sense organs are a knower. You're engaged as a person in the meadow. But we don't ever think about, we think we that's where we function from, you know. I am a conscious being in the meadow who sees and experiences the meadow from within the meadow, and I think about the meadow, and I respond to the meadow, and I react to the meadow. And that is me. I'm a conscious being who is engaged in the meadow in this way. And so it never occurs to me to think about the fact that, in fact, the consciousness, the me, you know, that is present, in fact, illumines the mind and illumines the sense organs, which act. The sense organs enjoy the consciousness, enjoy consciousness, and act. The mind enjoys consciousness and acts, but the consciousness itself is not doing anything. In other words, there's a subject-object relationship that I can pull back away from these functioning sense organs and functioning mind and functioning body. And this is, in fact, exactly what we have to do, because if I don't do that, then I am the individual in the meadow who is experiencing the meadow outside of myself. That's my situation here. I am only this individual who is within the universe experiencing it outside of myself. My sense organs flow out to give me knowledge of something external to me. Who is the me? External to this body. Right? The sense organs flow out, the mind flows out using the sense organs, and that's what gives me the experience of this world. And then I have hands and feet and speech in which to interact in this world. And so this becomes the conscious entity that has sense organs and mind, and then the ability to move this body and interact. That's my reality. And this is in fact, you know, he says, this is the great Maya, in fact. It's through my sense organs, this world appears to be outside of me. Well, the thing is, when you say it appears to be outside of me, who is it appearing to be outside of? Who is the me that it's appearing to be outside of? It's only, see, look, if through your sense organs, think of it like this also. Through your sense organs, you see this whole world, right? Whatever comes within your sphere. And you also see this physical body, you know? You see the whole world and you see the physical body. Physical body also is only really known to you through your sense organs. That's why you know this physical body. It's because it's objectified by your sense organs. What if you didn't? What if your sense organs weren't functioning? You get rid of them one by one. You get rid of this universe, but you also get rid of the physical body. You wouldn't have any knowledge of this physical body without your sense organs. You need these instruments. You wouldn't have any knowledge of your sense organs, nor would they function, if you didn't have your mind. Your mind needs to use your sense organs as instruments in order to perceive this world. If your mind is daydreaming, right, or thinking about something else, you're there. You're wherever your mind is, that's what's known. And so you need your mind to use these sense organs in order to perceive this body and this physical world. But as we keep going inward, you know, this mind is also known. Every thought after thought after thought after thought takes place in consciousness. Every thought that you have, every perception that you have, thought after thought after thought takes place in me, in consciousness. And so if you pull back, as you pull back, what happens is that the individual starts to join the meadow. See what I mean? The individual joins the meadow. The individual actually is part and parcel of the meadow. It is part of Ishvara. Like this. If you have, let's go back to our meadow again. If you have an imagination of a meadow, and there are characters in the meadow, and the characters in the meadow are, they're all ajnanis. They all have ignorance, self-ignorance. What does it mean? What does it mean for them to have self-ignorance? It means that they don't recognize that they're the one from whom the meadow has come. That, because that's the truth. If you have characters in the meadow that are walking around looking at the meadow from their own standpoint, from using their sense organs, they're looking around, identifying themselves with the character in the meadow. I know this, you know. And that's how it's experienced. I'm a conscious being, and I know this. I know this body, I know what I'm thinking, I know what my sense organs, how they're functioning, I know what I'm seeing, I know. That's the experience of any jiva in this creation. But when you start pulling back, every time you recognize that, well, wait a minute, I know this, that means it's an object, it's objectifiable, it joins the meadow. See what I mean? Like if I'm sitting here and I realize I know all of you through my sense organs, through my sense of sight, then you all belong to the universe. But once I realize that I know this body too, then this body joins the universe. See what I mean? This becomes an object of the room, not just you. This is an object of the room too. And so then I'm once removed. This body belongs to the room. It's given over to Ishvara. If I then realize that the sense organs that are perceiving this body and this room, right, are also something I know, then they also join the meadow. If I see my mind, which is thinking and having emotions and having feelings and having reactions and having perceptions, that those also are known, then they also join the meadow. So that's easy, in fact, for us to do in reference to our meadow imagination, because we already have the Ishvara standpoint just by the mere fact of my asking you to imagine a meadow. You immediately become Ishvara. And so then from that standpoint, you're already Ishvara. And then from that standpoint, you can see, oh, all of these beings are part of me. You already know that. It's a given. If I say, imagine a meadow, now put some beings in it. Put some people in the meadow. Okay, now you put the people in the meadow. Do the people belong to the meadow or not? Now I ask you, let those people talk to each other. Okay, now I have people in the meadow and they're all talking to each other. Have the people kind of look around and see the trees and see the sky and, you know, experience each other and sit down on the grass and enjoy the dampness of the grass. Okay, and that's no problem. They're all doing all of that. There's a whole story going on in the meadow now. You know? And see how those people are all kind of enjoying themselves in the meadow and how they're looking at each other and talking and whatnot. You see all of that. You see it all as part of the meadow, you know. And you see them seeing, right? You see them feeling, see them experiencing. And the whole while, they are all part of the warp and woof of the one meadow, which is who? Is me. None of them are outside of me. The meadow is not outside of me. They are not outside of me. Their experiences are not outside of me. All of them belong as part of one warp and woof. That is Ishwara's experience. Ishwara's experience is that the whole manifest knowledge is known. The whole infinite creation, it is known. I ask you to imagine a meadow. The whole meadow is known. Whatever you imagine is known. The Maya, when the Maya is manifest, the infinite manifest knowledge, the entire manifest knowledge is known and everything in it. Ishwara doesn't have an identity with any given thing in it because of being the whole, right? Whereas from the standpoint of everything in the creation, all of the jivas within the creation, they're all looking around and saying, I am, and I know this, and I know that, and I know this, and I know that. That's the ahankara. This is the ahankara. The I notion is nothing but is ignorance. You are not the jiva. There is no jiva. The jiva is born of ignorance. You are not a jiva. It's like, you know, me, say I have the meadow imagination and for some reason I get totally identified with the character in the meadow and then I wake up and I realize, what was that about? You know, I was never at any time a jiva. I never became a limited individual. I've always only been Ishwara. I've always only been Brahman. I've never been anything else. But this ajnanam, from the standpoint of all of the individuals, the ignorance, from self-ignorance, from the standpoint of all of the living beings in the meadow, is something that is inherent, innate, to the very projection, the Maya projection itself. It can't be helped. You can get rid of the ignorance, but it's not as though if you're a jiva born within the meadow, that because of the very limitations of your body, your mind, and your sense organs, they are limited, a limited part within a limitless whole. They're a limited part that is part of a limitless whole. That by the very nature of their situation, they are going to be bound by the limitations of the mind and the sense organs. And so there's an inbuilt ajnanam. That's why even though, you see, for all of us as jivas within the creation, there is a self-evident me. Like, you don't need a pramana or a means of knowledge to light up your being, that you are a conscious being. We don't need a means of knowledge for that. The conscious being that I am is self-evident, you know. It is itself lit. That's why, you know, it's like a brilliantly shining lamp in the middle of the pot, okay? So it's self-lit. That's why you can always say, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. That's everybody's nature. Nobody can take that away from you. It's never not that way. I'm always a conscious being. Then I'll say I'm an unhappy conscious being. Or I'm a happy conscious being, or I'm an agitated conscious being, or I'm a female conscious being, or a male conscious being, or an old conscious being, or a young conscious being. Right? Because I am only, even though the self-experience of just my being is self-evident, I don't know what is producing that experience. For Ishwara, it's not like that. I am infinite conscious being, you know, from whom this whole creation comes and resolves. That my freedom, the freedom and wholeness of myself, nothing's covering it because there's no limitation. I'm not identified with any one thing, even though the whole infinite knowledge is something that takes place in me, is sustained by me, I am its truth. But there's no limitation to where I'm experiencing this creation from within it. The jivas are experiencing the creation from within it, using minds and sense organs. And so their limitation is built in. So what has to happen, even though every jiva says, I am, I'm a conscious being, they have to recognize, they don't have to find out, they don't have to discover another conscious being. They just have to realize the conscious being that they are is the changeless conscious being, which is the conscious being of the entire creation. So that when you say, I am, you're referring to me, that self you're referring to, that is the self from which the whole meadow comes. That's the self from which the whole creation comes. That self is Ishvara. That self is Ishvara means the one who has this, you know, this Maya capacity for infinite manifest knowledge. In fact, consciousness is that knowledge. It manifests as that knowledge. There's no subject-object relationship between consciousness and this manifest display, as though there's consciousness and away from it somewhere is a manifest display of objects. You know, it's like taking the clay pot, and here's the clay, and let's put the pot over here, as though the clay is illumining the pot. There's no clay illumining the pot. There's no clay away from the pot. This whole infinite creation, you know, is nothing but the clay. It's nothing but consciousness. But this whole display, this whole infinite display, is coming and going and coming and going and coming and going. In the conscious being that it enjoys is not coming and going. And in this infinite display, there are sense organs, infinite number of, like in the Purusha Sukta, infinite number of hands and feet, infinite numbers of eyes, infinite number of eyes, an infinite number of noses and ears, infinite numbers of mouths, you know. And so from the standpoint of within this infinite display, you know, for each person, everything seems outside of me. Right? For each one of us. Everything is outside of me. Because of these sense organs coming through the pot. You know, where the consciousness is as though held in the belly of the pot. As though I'm holding, you know, I'm filled with consciousness and you're filled with consciousness and the consciousness is pouring out of our eyes and sense organs. That's the grand illusion. You need to understand Vedanta. Swamiji has often said the dream or imagination is the Achilles heel of this creation. It's what, you know, slices through the reality of this creation, because you can experience this time, space, dimensional duality, seeing the whole creation outside of yourself, as you do all of the time in dream or in imagination. And then you can realize that there isn't any difference, really. If you look at the dream, if you hold up the dream or the imagination right next to this whole universe, you can say there's a difference in, like Swamiji would say something like, there's a difference in the length of the joke. You know, like this, the universe goes on for a long, long time. Your little dream goes on for a few minutes. But from within it, and the relationship of the dream to conscious being, the relationship of the dream or the imagination to conscious being, and the relationship of the entire infinite creation to conscious being is identical. There's no difference at all, you know, because the subject-object relationships go on within both. You know, the seer seeing is within the dream, within the imagination. The seer seeing here, within the creation. But what about consciousness? What about the consciousness, the conscious being? That's not within the creation. Your consciousness is not within the creation. In the sense of, you know, let me look, if it was within the creation as an object, I could hold it up to you. Here. I thought some Pied Piper was coming. Nice ringtone.
Yeah.
Okay, is everybody following me? I'm kind of sitting in this room.
Yeah, where were we?
I'm kind of sitting in this arena for quite a while. But, you know, once you kind of understand this, the thing is, you can stop right now, and just in terms of this room, this room might as well be the universe. This is our universe, this room. And here in this room, here we are all, as within the room, experiencing the room. Within the room, we're experiencing the room, right? And so you're seeing the room through your sense organs. So there's all of the subject-object. But if you slow everything down for a minute and just see, is your the conscious being that you are, is it contained by this body, mind, sense organs? Are you contained? Is consciousness contained? Because actually, when you think about it, just in terms of this room, the entire room is in consciousness. Just let yourself see this for a minute. This entire room is in consciousness. It's known. The entire room is known. Right? And we all are agreed with that. Just through your sense organs, the entire room is known. And now, just notice also that not only is your entire room known, that whatever you're perceiving, your body is also known. Right? I mean, that's... The room is known, your body is known, you can sense that through your sense of touch and your sense of sight. So that is known. Your sense organs are known. Just let yourself also be aware of your sense organs. They're also known. Right? Whatever thoughts are going on in your, or sensations are going on in your mind, those are also known. If you have an I thought, I'm doing this or I'm doing that, that's also known. Right? And now look at your own being. Your own being is also known. Known, right? It's not unknown. So the whole thing is known, actually. But the knownness doesn't ever stop. There's no end to the knownness. There's no knower knownness, in fact. There's only knownness. The knownness itself is the very, that is the very knowledge, that's the very nature of consciousness. So there is no, you can't say that the knownness or the consciousness stops here, or that it stops in your mind or in your sense organs. There's no stopping it. There's no place where it is not. You can do the same if you want to separate for a moment consciousness and existence. In fact, they're both exactly, consciousness is existence and existence is consciousness, because neither one can be objectified, and there's neither, there's nothing ever away from either one. So I can do the same thing with isness. Isness is not inside of me or outside of me. Being is not inside or outside. There is nothing that is that doesn't enjoy being. Whether I go internally to my, oh, my sense organs, are they there? Do they enjoy being? Yes. Do my thoughts enjoy being? Yes. Does the ahankara enjoy being? Yes. Do I enjoy being? Of course. Does what I perceive enjoy being? Yes. Is there anything that doesn't enjoy being? No. There's no division. There's no am, is, are. There's just one being, and there's nothing that you can separate from it. Just like there's one consciousness. In terms of this room, use the word known. Is there anything in this room from the, both the seen and what you ascribe to the seer that is not known? So if I say, all of you are known, the body is known, my sense organs are known, my mind is known, my all of my moods are known, my thoughts are known, the space is known, the I thought is known, my knowledges and ignorances are known, what is not known, even what is not is known. There's nothing that can occur ever at any time, including the thought of non-existence that also is known. Let me think of non-existence. Let me imagine non-existence. Yes, that's an interesting imagination, and that is known. You can't escape knownness. Right? That is Brahman. That's Brahman. You know? And so we think of me as just being something contained here, but actually there is not even an experience of me being contained. There's an experience of subject-object in reference to being an individual within the meadow, or an individual within the world. But there is no experience of containment if you look at just being itself as me, amness. Change amness to isness, if you want to, or just say it being. There's nothing that's away from it. And now think, if you think, just think me, just your own sense of self, just me, your very personal identity, me. And then you see, where is it located? Honestly, you think, just me, just your own being. Where is it located? It's not located. It is the center of, it is the center, right? It's like this, that you are the center that doesn't have any exterior to it. Sometimes I say, okay, just think of me and stick yourself, just the me in the middle of the room. You know, just me, this very personal me, just put it in this kind of as a in the middle of the room, or put it above your head. Sometimes Swamiji will do a meditation. They'll say, okay, just put the me up here, just up here somewhere. Just so that you can recognize that you're not contained. The conscious being that you are is not contained. It's never changing. It's never moving. It's not in the body. Me is not in the body. The body is in me. Right? It's like the meadow. I'm not in the meadow. The meadow is in me. You know, another way to try to work with this, to really gain that kind of a nishta in that understanding is this. When you think of a meadow, I know I've said this many times, but you still have to get it. Because there's something, there's level and level and level upon level to understand about this. If you have a thought, like if I ask you to think of a meadow and put some people in it, that's easy for you to recognize that I am the self of that meadow, right? That my consciousness pervades everything in that imagination. My whole being pervades the whole thing, right? That's true. I mean, I think we can do that. Now, that thought of the meadow is just that. It is a thought. It's what we call a vritti. It's a thought modification. Now, it's a meadow thought modification, right? What do you think it is when I look at this room? What do you think that is? Using my eyes, right? Using my eyes, I gain a vritti, a thought modification of this room, right? You understand how that works? That, like, if how we have to kind of parse this to understand it, is if I use my eyes and I focus on the room, so whatever scope I can get most of the room into this, you know, this much of the room I can get in through just through my eyes, that forms a thought modification, which then I illumine, right? So whether I'm thinking of a meadow, or I ask you to think of a mosquito, or of a pot, or a perception of the room, or of a memory even. Say if I want you to remember what your front porch looks like. That's a memory. These are all thoughts. They're nothing but thoughts. Any thought that you have, right, you pervade. You illumine the thought, right? You are aware of the thought. You illumine the thought. The entire thought exists in your consciousness. The entire thought of this room and everything that is perceived is now existing in my being, in my consciousness. I illumine it. Now I think, well, if I say that about the meadow, that's easy. The whole meadow and all of the beings in the meadow exist in me, in my consciousness. But the meadow is a vritti. It's a thought modification. This room, this perception of the room, is a vritti. It's a thought modification. So your experience of this room, you pervade the entire experience of the room. In the same way that you pervade the entire experience of the meadow thought. There isn't any difference. In fact, there's no real legitimate, there's no real legitimate reason for you to have this dehatma buddhi, this total identification with the body, you know, except that we have a sense of touch and all these things that make that so real. But actually, if we hold up the meadow thought versus and juxtapose it next to the perception, right? Both are equally vrittis, both are equally illumined by me, both are equally pervaded by consciousness, both are equally pervaded by existence. I am the self of both. So in this vritti, I am the self of everything in this vritti. My being pervades the entire vritti. So I should be able to distinguish that, because you can distinguish it when you're imagining a meadow. What is the difference between... Because, see, we're talking just about a thought modification. If you can see that I am the self of the imaginary meadow, you have to be able to see that I am the self of the perception of this room. Because it's exactly the same. All you're experiencing is the perception of the room, the vritti, that is equally pervaded by being and consciousness. So you have to be able to... They're not different from each other, is what I'm saying. except for your very firm conviction that I'm the body. That's the Dehatma. It's a very, very firm conviction. And so that's why it takes so much work to objectify, realize to what degree actually these sense organs and body and mind are objectified, that they belong to the meadow, they belong to the room, you know? And so that's what he's trying to say here. It as though goes outside, you know, to make this world known, then because I'm the conscious being, I'm the knower, and you're the known. But what we have to see is that, in fact, the entire experience of all experiences, you know, I am the conscious being that illumines both the subject and object. So actually, I'm the consciousness that the subject enjoys and the consciousness that the object enjoys. That's what has to be seen. And there's just so many different teaching prakriyas that we have to go through to get us to really recognize this, because of the you know, beginningless conviction that I am this physical body and I am here knowing you. So my consciousness is pouring out to perceive you, subject-object relationship. Now, I'm not going to do this tonight because our time is up, but just so that your mind will have this jump to work on. In terms of my own personal experience as an individual within the meadow, right, an individual within the creation, my only experience of the creation is through vrittis, thought modifications, whether it be an imagination of a meadow or a perception generated through sense perception or in memory. My relationship with the creation is only one of the illumination of vrittis, thought modifications. And so if we can understand that in terms of a jiva, as an individual, everything that I know is only in the form of a thought modification. That's why, you know, if we say if your eyes are looking at something but you're daydreaming, all you know is the daydream. So it's only what's going on in the mind that is known. And whatever is going on in the mind is illumined by consciousness, by you, by awareness. And so that we can get very clear, but that's not good enough, because then you say, but this is real out here, which I am knowing through the vritti. Right? So there's twofold things that has to happen here. First of all, I have to recognize that the only experience I have is of the vritti, and the vritti is always inclusive of both subject and object. Right? The knower and the known, both are objectified. But then I have to go out into this world that we think is matter, is material, you know, and rip it apart to realize that there's no material here. There's no such thing as matter. It does not exist. Because everything in this creation, if you try to show, one thing in this creation, you can never find it. It comes into time, it comes into being, goes out of being, it's infinitely divisible. So this side of things we also have to understand, so that you can really realize that this whole thing, in fact, is one giant vritti that we call Ishwara. And from our standpoint, we're little individuals in that one infinite vritti. And these little individuals within the one infinite vritti have their own little vrittis, you know, to really confuse things. You know? Like you have a nice imagination, and that's an infinite vritti. That's your infinite little Ishwara vritti, your big imagination. And then, of course, in your imagination, you have little beings running around, and they all have their little vrittis, you know. And their little vrittis make them experience themselves as a conscious being. See that? They are the conscious being. Each one is a conscious being. But the conscious being that each one is Ishwara. Who you are, the conscious being that you are, is Ishwara. Why I say is Ishwara? I mean, because Brahman has the Maya, that infinite knowledge. No? this body, mind, sense organs is part of that infinite knowledge. There's no Brahman that without Ishvara. I mean, there's no Brahman without Maya.
What?
There's no Brahman without Maya. Maya is not something out there. No. Brahman is free from Maya, but Maya is there. We have to stop.
Well, we were just getting to the good part.
I know. That's how it goes. Sorry. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. We'll have class on Thursday, but then I'm not sure when I'm coming back. I'm hoping to be back on July 7th. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, soon.
That's what I'm thinking, but I took that date knowing that I might extend it. So it just depends on what's going on in India, whether I end up staying for another couple of weeks or not. So I'll just send everybody an email when I get back.
Thank you.
You're not going to send the email until you get back?
I can send it I can send it from India.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, if that date approaches and you decide to extend, I'm wondering if you'd be able to send it then. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. Once I set the plane ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll send the email. Sometimes that plane ticket is not so easy to get, you know, like it's fine to extend the plane ticket, but then it's hard to get plane tickets in India sometimes because there's a lot of travel back and forth, so I have to get a booking. I kind of am feeling that I'm going to come back, though.
But when is it a big celebration?
It's like the 23rd.
June.
Yeah. Oh, no. The 23rd of July.
Oh, so you wouldn't stay for
it? I want to come. Yeah, I don't want to stay for it. I know that from the 10th on, they're very, very crowded. So I don't think I want to do that. But you never know. Change your mind when you get over to that. Into that, you know, reality. So things. I'm just talking from this reality. I don't know what it'll be like when I'm over there. Yeah, things change. So.
Celebration at Swamiji's ashram?
Yeah, ashram in Coimbatore, in his 80th birthday, they had a celebration here in Sailorsburg on his 80th birthday. But then there's another very special date, auspicious date in Coimbatore. The 80th birthday is a big birthday, like the 60th birthday is a very big birthday. And so Coimbatore really wanted to do that 80th birthday, and so does Sailorsburg, but the Swamiji is in here on during that time, so they did the 80th birthday in Sailorsburg, big event. And so now Coimbatore found an auspicious date within that year to do so that they could do it. And so they have a very big event planned that'll be in Coimbatore itself, but the ashram will still be very full with people staying there. Oh, that'll be...
Carol, I have a question. About the knownness of the known. As the knownness is to the known as the clay is to the pot. Right?
Yeah.
We say everything is and is known.
Yes. And the isness is to the is to the is to the is to the object as the clay is to the pot, because isness and knownness are the same thing. Is the
right.
Sat and chit are the same thing.
But it's like when you say everything is and is known, that's from the standpoint of Ishwar and the creation.
Yes, and from the jiva. From your experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Because from the standpoint of, I mean, it's not a standpoint, but Brahman, we wouldn't say is known, is knownness, you know, is the consciousness, is knownness, is consciousness, but is not the form that we call known.
You know, right, what I'm trying to do though is say you have Brahman is the is knownness without the form.
Right.
Okay. So now when you stick the form on there, what gives the form its knownness? We think the knownness belongs to the form, and I'm saying that's just the self-evident Brahman.
Right.
And so everything, the entire creation, this whole Maya, enjoys a sense of is-knownness, because that is the clay. Is-knownness is the clay.
Knownness.
And you get rid of all the names and forms, and what is left is knownness. Without, it's not dual. That's what... It's these are strange words. Is knownness is a strange set of words to use for self-evident or self-luminous. And that's what the words they use in Sanskrit, you know, swata siddha. It's self-evident. It's swaprakashatvam. It's self-luminous, self-shining. And so then, What are words that we use in reference to our experience of the creation? It is known, the self is known. I like to take it back, you know, and I do this thing like the painting is known, the space is known, the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the ahankara is known, the I is known. But the knownness is the self-evident nature.
Mm-hmm.
Knownness really doesn't have anything to do with an object. But all objects enjoy it because it's the very nature of Brahman.
So knownness remains.
Knownness remains. It's the self-evident, you know. Consciousness, knownness, these are all synonyms. Consciousness, knownness, self-evident, self-luminous.
It can get confusing when we say is known and then there's that association with known and knowledge because Brahman isn't a knower. You know, then we say Brahman, everything is and is known because there is that knownness, which is the, you know, the substrate reality of knowledge. But Brahman's not a knower, so we don't say, if we say everything is and is known, it doesn't mean it has a verity.
No. But what I'm trying to do with that is that there is no knower, that in fact everything is known without a knower. That's why you say like the painting is known, the space is known, the body is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, the self is known. There is no knower. There's only known all the way through. Now we can divide this knower known up by looking at the sense organs in reference to the object. You know, subject, object, like that, that becomes the instrument. But if you look at it a different way, the object is known, the sense organs are known, the mind is known, that in fact you can't find knower or knowing. It's just everything is that completed state all the way to the self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then you try to show me the knower and all you can find is the known. In terms of experientially. So So
we use it differently on the different levels, because we also say is known from a standpoint of the mind and the sense organs, that sort of knowership in between what are really objects in the creation. That's
right, and I'm trying to take that knownness that we use in terms of, like, I am the knower, like my eyes are the seer, this is the seen. I'm the knower, this is the known. But what I'm trying to do is take that knownness and realize that the knownness goes all the way through that. You know, we think I'm the knower, this is the known. But actually what's happening is that this is the known, this is the known, this is the known, this is the known, this is the known. There is no knower experience. It's just trying to break through that, you know, bring the knownness back through the upadis and let it land on the self, which is what is the very experience of knownness. But I agree with you, it's tricky.
Well, is it wrong to say, then I know this or that thing?
It's not wrong, it's just like if I say I'm walking to the store, I know what I mean. If I say, you know, because, you know. Mm-hmm. But say I say, you know, I know the painting, I'm aware, I see the painting, I'm the knower of the painting. We talk like that in Vyavahara, just in empirical reality, but say if I were to analyze it, to see what is really going on there.
So saying, like, I know something, in a sense, if that's the ahankara, it could be the ahankara.
Yeah, or you're just talking in practical language. As a jnani, you're talking in practical language. But otherwise, if you say, if you're an ajnani and you say, you know, I know the painting, what you mean is, I, this human being here, am the one who, with my sense organs and mind, I am the knower of the painting. And that's it ends there.
Right. But it's actually an inaccurate statement, in a sense. I mean, from the point of view of the teachings, it's not really accurate. It's like saying I'm the body-mind, I'm the knower of this or that thing, right? It's like the ahankara, it's inaccurate, it's not quite...
Well, it's accurate within Maya.
Yeah.
Yeah, within subject-object. You know, duality.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not accurate in terms of who you really are. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, well, if you look at it like this, you can, you know, the satya mitya. If you can say, the mind is me, but I am free of the mind. And that's the part that's not known. The sense organs are me. The sense organs are the conscious being. The conscious being is free of the sense organs. That the satya mitya part is not known. So within this creation, this knower known is there. I mean, I would be very weird. I mean, we function that way. Just like we also don't have to talk about everything being quarks, you know, quarks and molecules and all these stuff, because we're functioning on this level. But say in terms of self-identity, you don't know who you really are, then you take on all of these qualities. You know, of being this body, mind, sense organs, conscious being who is subject to birth and death, who is living in an inert world. I'm a conscious pocket of consciousness living in a, you know, an inert world, trying to make my way and trying to gain happiness out of the objects. It's all totally confused. And so it creates a lot of sorrow. Mm-hmm. So you can still, you live within this manifest duality, but you know what it is. You know who you are, you know what it is, you know what the source of ananda is, you know what the source of being is, you understand this is Ishvara. And then you function in the world in a way that's true to the way the world is, and that's much better. You know, than taking yourself to be what you're not, and taking the world to be what it's not. It's beating your head against the wall. Because nothing really works. And nothing holds. Nothing fructifies into what you want it to. You can't become who you want to be from this point of identification. Mm. It's not possible.
Mm. Yet you keep looking.
And you keep trying. Of course you keep trying. You keep trying to get yourself back.
Yeah. But when you say beginningless conviction of subject-object, Relationship.
Relationship, yeah, of identity with the body. It's beginningless. Because the universe is beginningless.
Like that would always be there. It's just your relationship to your understanding of what that really means changes.
The experience of subject-object duality will always be there as long as you have a body. Mm-hmm. Because it's an instrument for that. But there's a recognition of yourself that is free of that. Mm-hmm. So you have the subject-object, it's kind of like walking through yourself in a way. You know, like because you know who you are, and at the same time you're experiencing the body, mind, sense organs in relationship with the world. Mm-hmm. But you also recognize Ishwara. You know, and you also recognize yourself at the same time as experiencing the duality. At the same time, you recognize the nature of your being. Both are there at the same time. Just like you can, you know, you can if you have a clay pot, you can see the pot and the clay.
And they're coexisting.
Yeah, they're coexisting, mm-hmm. and the one can't cover the other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like trying to make the pot really complex so it can cover the clay. There's no possibility that the pot cannot cover the clay. No matter what it tries to, it's impossible because there's no gap between the clay and the pot. So it's not possible for it to. And so for you, no matter this is what's so key for you. No matter what the experience is within Vyavahara or subject, Vyav means empirical reality or within subjective reality. It can in no way touch you or cover you. The viveka needs to be there. And see, the thing is, of course, we don't want to have a painful mind and, you know, agitated mind, hurt mind. All of these are, you know, traumas and all of the things that we're trying to heal within relativity. We're trying to heal it. We don't want those things because just like I don't want a broken arm, you know, it's painful. But whatever it is that's going on is in no way covering you. But we're not used to making that viveka, that discrimination. We're used to thinking, even when you think of enlightenment, we think of having a blissful mind. You know? Because we don't want pain. So when we think of enlightenment, and even the word ananda, see, if we think enlightenment, moksha is, you know, recognizing myself as satchit ananda. Ananda. Ananda, it means bliss. And so we want to gain, you know, a blissful mind. But actually, this blissful mind stuff, this is like what we call a secondary gain, only in the sense that with knowledge, because you're because of the vairagya, you're no longer asking the world to give you your ananda as you mature in your knowledge. And when you're not asking the world or your mind or things to give you this knowledge, your mind is relaxed. Just think, when your mind is, it's like in that verse in the Gita, we had Udasina, you know? Oh, where did we have that Udasina? But,
no,
oh, in Advaita Makaranda, the Udasina.
No.
No?
I thought it was in the Gita, wasn't it?
Udasina. Yeah, maybe it was the Gita. You know, where you're not asking the world to supply you with the ananda that you've discovered to be yourself. And so that gives the mind a much deeper level, natural level of shanti. And that mind is a much easier to live with. A mind that is relaxed and it solved the riddle. It understands what's going on, and so it enjoys a much deeper level of peace. But that is secondary. Primary is that I am free. Myself is free. Nobody can take that away from me. I am the ananda, whether my mind is upset or not. I'm still there in exactly the same way. I don't depend upon my mind. My mind has to be this way or that way in order for me to be free. Now, my mind's mitya. My mind is doing this or that or causing in this problem or that problem because of reasons within relative reality that I have to understand and work on, because I don't want it to be causing me pain. So my knowledge is very helpful to resolving those pains, and so are a lot of other psychological tricks and things that we know how to really help the mind to settle down. But that isn't really the moksha. The moksha is that myself, no matter what the mind is doing, is always exactly the same and is full and complete, and that is aparoksha. That is totally recognized by me because of the viveka. That's it. And nothing can take it away from me, not even my mind having a little hissy fit or whatever. You know, being upset about this thing or that thing. It's okay. And I can just calm it down and be all right. You know, it'll be okay.
You know, also that there's no conflict between the clay and the pot. An amazing...
Impossible for there to be conflict.
That's a beautiful recognition.
And there's no rejection, that the clay's not going to say, get away. You know? Not at all. It doesn't even think like that. That's why yourself is so accommodating. One thing that Swamiji said, this is a little tangential, but once he said, you know, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. Has to be as big as Ishwara, because the self accommodates everything. You know, so Ishwara doesn't push away the pot, you know. So, I mean, that's how big the heart has to be, or otherwise you have to just suffer its reactions and take care of it. But the reactions are non-reactions, all that's maturing of the mind, that isn't really the moksha. The moksha is that you're free, no matter what your mind's doing. And not just intellectual, but you actually see the truth of that. Not see it intellectually. It's intellectually fine, but you recognize that. About yourself, that you are always the same, no matter what's going on. That's the real freedom. So, what are we doing? How's our people doing here? All right, should we call it a night?
Yeah,
good.